You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on the inner game of tennis. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on the inner game of tennis, the classic guide to the mental side of peak performance by W. Timothy Galway. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. It is the thesis of this book that neither mastery nor satisfaction can be found in the playing of any game without giving some attention to the relatively neglected skills of the inner game. This is the game that takes place in the mind of the player, and it is played against such obstacles as lapses in concentration, nervousness, self-doubt, and self-condemnation. In short, it is played to overcome all habits of mind which inhibit excellence in performance. The player of the inner game comes to value the art of relaxed concentration above all other skills. He discovers a true basis for self-confidence, and he learns that the secret to winning any game lies in not trying too hard. He aims at the kind of spontaneous performance which occurs only when the mind is calm and seems at one with the body, which finds its own surprising ways to surpass its own limits again and again. Moreover, while overcoming the common hang-ups of competition, the player of the inner game uncovers a will to win, which unlocks all his energy, and which is never discouraged by losing. End quote. That is Timothy Galway from The Inner Game of Tennis. As Galway tells us in the first line of the book, every game is composed of two parts, an outer game and an inner game. The outer game focuses on winning a match or achieving some external outcome against an external opponent. The inner game, of course, focuses on what's going on inside our minds and how we can dial that in to win. Originally published in 1974, this book is, as the subtitle suggests, the classic guide to the mental side of peak performance. Pete Carroll, coach of the Seattle Seahawks and author of Win Forever, see those notes, wrote the foreword and talks about how deeply inspired and influenced he was by the book. I think it's fair to say that all modern mental training books lean into this wisdom in one way or another. Tennis is the medium through which the finer points of the inner game are explored in this book, but the wisdom transcends tennis and sport. It's a great, quick read. Let's jump in and explore some of my favorite big ideas, starting with big idea number one, self one and self two. Quote, now we are ready for the first major postulate of the inner game. Within each player, the kind of relationship that exists between self one and self two is the prime factor in determining one's ability to translate his knowledge of technique into effective action. In other words, the key to better tennis, or better anything, lies in improving the relationship between the conscious teller, self one, and the natural capabilities of self two. End quote. Self one and self two. The relationship between them is, as Galway notes, the first major postulate of the inner game. So, who is self one and who is self two? In short, imagine you're playing tennis. You make a shot you're not thrilled about. You tell yourself, come on, keep your eyes on the ball, bend your knees, etc., etc., etc. Who's talking to whom? Galway tells us self one is the version of you constantly telling self two what to do. Self one is the teller, and self two is the doer. Other mental performance experts like Lanny Basham describe self-one as the conscious mind and self-two as the subconscious mind. Lanny adds self-image as a third component to his mental management system. Check out the notes on With Winning in Mind for more on that. The number one thing we want to remember, it's all about learning to trust self-two. Self-one, or your conscious mind, thinks it's the one who should be driving the show, but it's not. Heidi Grant Halvorsen, one of the world's leading researchers focused on the science of success and goal setting, puts it this way in her book, Succeed. See those notes. She says, quote, metaphorically speaking, if your unconscious mind can hold information equivalent to a NASA supercomputer, your conscious mind can hold roughly the contents of a post-it note, end quote. Think about it. Your subconscious mind is currently, and every single moment, perfectly orchestrating billions and billions of things, literally, right now. You're reading this while somehow your heart continues to beat. Your lungs are keeping you oxygenated. Your body is kept at a regular temperature, and countless other things are going on behind the scenes to keep you rocking. And you're not thinking about any of that. For some reason, when we get into things like tennis or golf or sales or teaching or whatever, we think we, aka the thinking post-it note version of ourselves, needs to be in charge for things to go smoothly. But remember, self 2, or the subconscious mind, equals NASA supercomputer. Self 1, the conscious mind, equals post-it note. Which one do you want driving the show? Ha! Here's another way to look at it. John Elliott tells us about the difference between a trusting mindset and a training mindset in his great book, Overachievement. See those notes as well. He says, quote, "To be sure, great performers are well-trained, experienced, smart, and in some cases, divinely talented. But the way their brains work during a performance is a lot more like a squirrel's than like Einstein's. Like squirrels, the best in every business do what they have learned to do without questioning their abilities. They flat out trust their skills, which is why we call this high-performance state of mind the trusting mindset. Routine access to the trusting mindset is what separates great performers from the rest of the pack." End quote. Love it. Now let's take a look at how to settle down self one and fully trust self two. Next big idea, quieting the mind by degrees. Quote, "In short, getting it together requires slowing the mind. Quieting the mind means less thinking, calculating, judging, worrying, fearing, hoping, trying, regretting, controlling, jittering, or distracting. The mind is still when it is totally here and now in perfect oneness with the action and the actor. It is the purpose of the inner game to increase the frequency and duration of these moments, quieting the mind by degrees and realizing thereby a continual expansion of our ability to learn and perform." End quote. So, if we want to learn how to trust our self 2 / NASA supercomputer selves and just let it rip, we need to learn how to quiet the mind. You notice that little monkey swinging around up there, constantly evaluating everything? Well, we want less thinking, calculating, judging, worrying, fearing, hoping, trying, regretting, controlling, jittering, or distracting going on up there. Galway tells us that the first skill we want to develop as we learn how to quiet our mind is to let go of the human inclination to constantly, but only constantly, judge everything as either good or bad. We want to observe what's happening cleanly, without labeling everything as either good or bad. It just is what it is. No big deal. We hit the ball into the net. That's not bad, and it's certainly not helpful to let our inner critic run loose with, "You're such an idiot. Gah, again? Now we're going to lose," etc., etc., etc. I love the way Troy Basham walks us through his post-task process in attainment. See those notes as well. He tells us, quote, "What you allow yourself to think about after a task matters." He calls his process reloading, and it goes like this. If you hit your target or perform the way you wanted to, you feast on that. Great. If you did okay, you simply say, okay. If you were way off target, you don't beat yourself up. You simply say, needs work. Nice and neutral. A clean observation. Needs work. Then you quickly imagine what a better or perfect outcome would have looked like, so you can program that into your subconscious, and bam, done. You're back in the moment. That is a great way to quiet the mind, use self one wisely, and trust self two. Here's to simply observing and reloading. Next big idea, standing in wonder at the process. Quote, "Read this simple analogy and see if an alternative to the judging process doesn't begin to emerge. When we plant a rose seed in the earth, we notice that it is small, but we do not criticize it as rootless and stemless. we treat it as a seed, giving it the water and nourishment required of a seed. When it first shoots up out of the earth, we don't condemn it as immature and underdeveloped, nor do we criticize the buds for not being open when they appear. We stand in wonder at the process taking place and give the plant the care it needs at each stage of its development. The rose is a rose from the time it is a seed to the time it dies. Within it, at all times, it contains its whole potential. It seems to be constantly in the process of change. Yet, at each state, at each moment, it is perfectly all right as it is. End quote. I just love that. Reminds me of a couple other great rose gems. Let's reflect on them and continue to cultivate the seed. First, Thomas Stirner puts it this way in The Practicing Mind. Got notes on that as well. He says, as we attempt to understand ourselves and our struggles with life's endeavors, we may find peace in the observation of a flower. Ask yourself, at what point in a flower's life, from seed to full bloom, has it reached perfection? He continues by saying, accepting that this is a lifetime effort, and that in the beginning your progress may seem almost unnoticeable, is part of the lesson to be learned. Keep thinking of the flower. Regardless of whatever stage of growth and evolution you are in every moment, you are perfect at being who you are. Vernon Howard frames it this way in The Power of Your Supermind, where he tells us, do not be impatient with your seemingly slow progress. Do not try to run faster than you presently can. If you are studying, reflecting, and trying, you are making progress whether you are aware of it or not. A traveler walking the road in the darkness of night is still going forward. Someday, some way, everything will break open, like the natural unfolding of a rosebud. So, let's remember the perfection of the rose at each stage of its development, as we embrace each stage of our development. Galway continues from the thought above by telling us, the errors we make can be seen as an important part of the development process. In its process of developing, our tennis game gains a great deal from errors. Even slumps are part of the process. They are not bad events, but they seem to endure endlessly as long as we call them bad and identify with them. Like a good gardener who knows when the soil needs alkali and when acid, the competent tennis pro should be able to help the development of your game. Usually, the first thing that needs to be done is to deal with the negative concepts inhibiting the innate developmental process. End quote. That's so good. Remember, your judgments aren't helping. Just see your behaviors as they are. If you observe that you feel better after eating a certain way, then note that without judgment. If you observe that you feel more alive and happy when you exercise, don't beat yourself up for going a week without exercise. Just notice and then choose a new behavior. If you observe that you are cranky when you don't get a good night of rest, don't judge. Just see if you can get a little more rest tonight. Here's to developing our non-judgmental awareness and appreciating every step of our unfolding awesomeness. All right, next big idea, asking for qualities. Quote, asking for qualities describes the other kind of role-playing. When introducing this idea, I usually say something like this. Imagine that I am the director of a television series. Knowing that you are an actor that plays tennis, I ask if you would like to do a bit part as a top-flight tennis player. I assure you that you needn't worry about hitting the ball out or into the net because the camera will only be focused on you and will not follow the ball. What I'm mainly interested in is that you adopt professional mannerisms and that you swing your racket with super self-assurance. Above all, your face must express no self-doubt. You should look as if you are hitting every ball exactly where you want to. Really get into the role. Hit as hard as you like and ignore where the ball is actually going. End quote. Asking for qualities. This is one of Galway's three practices for communicating with self too. The other two, letting go of judgments and the art of creating images of the outcomes you want to see. When he asks his player to try this, their performance goes way up. How about you? How would you show up in your life if you acted like a top-flight pro in your given field? adopted professional mannerisms, and did your thing with super self-assurance, with no doubt and pure confidence. Act like that. Seriously, how would you walk, talk, breathe, and be if you were acting like the best possible version of yourself? Be that and watch your performance soar. Next big idea, fasten your mind to the rhythm of breathing. Quote, when the mind is fastened to the rhythm of breathing, it tends to become absorbed and calm. Whether on or off the court, I know of no better way to begin to deal with anxiety than to place the mind on one's breathing process. Anxiety is fear about what may happen in the future, and it occurs only when the mind is imagining what the future may bring. But when your attention is on the here and now, the actions which need to be done in the present have their best chance of being successfully accomplished. And as a result, the future will become the best possible present. End quote. From peak performance coaches to positive psychologists, if there's one universal theme that all great mental training teachers come back to, it's this. Bring your mind back to the present via your breath. Galway doesn't even try to change his breathing. He simply observes it. That act alone brings you out of any fear of the future or regret of the past and into this moment. Breathing, it's huge. You bringing your attention to your breath when your mind starts to get a little jumpy? Practice that. Remember this next big idea. Challenges reveal our hidden potential. Quote, why does the surfer wait for the big wave? The answer is simple, and it unraveled the confusion that surrounds the true nature of competition. The surfer waits for the big wave because he values the challenge it presents. He values the obstacles the wave puts between him and his goal of riding the wave to the beach. Why? Because it is those very obstacles, the size and churning power of the wave, which draw from the surfer his greatest effort. It is only against the big waves that he is required to use all his skill, all his courage and concentration to overcome. Only then can he realize the true limits of his capacities. At that point, he often attains the peak. In other words, the more challenging the obstacle he faces, the greater the opportunity for the surfer to discover and extend his true potential. The potential may have always been within him, but until it is manifested in action, it remains a secret hidden within himself. The obstacles are a very necessary ingredient to this process of self-discovery. Note that the surfer in this example is not out to prove himself. He is not out to show himself or the world how great he is, but is simply involved in the exploration of his latent capacities. He directly and intimately experiences his own resources and thereby increases his self-knowledge. End quote. Galway shares this wisdom in a genius chapter on the meaning of competition. He describes how he struggled with the idea of competition until he realized that we can only actualize our latent potential in the face of obstacles that challenge us to bring out our absolute best. When viewed through that lens, competition is amazing because our opponent provides the very challenge we need to actualize our potential. Then, we can go so far as to truly love our opponent and our challenges because they are giving us an opportunity to grow and become better human beings. How's your relationship to challenges in your life? Can you see just a little more clearly how they're the fuel to your actualization? Think about that one. And the final big idea, don't fight old habits, start new ones. Quote, in short, there is no need to fight old habits, start new ones. It is the resisting of an old habit that puts you in that trench. Starting a new pattern is easy when done with childlike disregard for imagined difficulties. You can prove this to yourself by your own experience, end quote. This is another big idea. Galway tells us that we need to be more like babies learning to walk. They don't get all upset with themselves because they have the bad habit of crawling. They just move on to walking because it's simply a better way to get around. Too often, we beat ourselves up with obsessive judgment about our bad habits, and convince ourselves that it'll be super hard to create new habits. Well, that's one way to approach it. Another way is to simply start new habits. Let go of the imagined difficulties and just go rock it. Here's to winning the inner game of our lives as we optimize our lives and actualize our potential in greatest service to the world. There you go. Quick look at the inner game of tennis. Thank you, W. Timothy Galway. If you enjoyed this note, I think you'll enjoy the Mental Toughness Collection, Mental Training, Win Forever by Pete Carroll is a great note. Mind Gym, With Winning in Mind, Attainment, and the Art of Mental Training, to name a few. Now let's take a look at those quotes from the sidebar. Timothy Galway tells us, to uncover and explore the potential within the human body is the quest of the inner game. In this book, it'll be explored through the medium of tennis. Clearly, the new relationship that must be established with ourselves must be based on the maxim, trust thyself. When we unlearn how to be judgmental, it is possible to achieve spontaneous, focused play. Galway tells us, once you learn how to learn, you have only to discover what is worth learning. He tells us, learning focus of attention is a master skill that has unlimited application. Today, he says, I play every point to win. It's simple and it's good. I don't worry about winning or losing the match, but whether or not I am making the maximum effort during every point, because I realize that is where the true value lies. And finally, Timothy Galway says, since the mind seems to have a will of its own, how can one learn to keep it in the present? By practice. There is no other way. Every time your mind starts to leak away, simply bring it gently back. There you go. The inner game of tennis. Hope you enjoyed. I look forward to sharing more with you soon. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.